Chapter 31. Kitty. The first feeling was that of terrible constriction. With the sudden act of waking, her infinite dimensions were all at once reduced to a single point. She was compressed back down to the margins of her body, tangled up within its lumpen weight. A moment of suffocation, the hideous sensation of being buried alive, then she remembered how to breathe. She lay in darkness, hearing the rhythms within her, the blood moving, the air wheezing back and forth, the bubbles shifting and gurgling in stomach and bowels. She'd never realized before quite how noisy she was, how heavy, how densely packed. It seemed an appalling complexity, and one that would be quite impossible to operate. The idea of moving it mystified her. Gradually the confusion resolved itself into vague recognition of the contours of her limbs. The knees drawn up almost to her waist, the feet gently overlapping each other, the hands clasped close against her breast. She visualized it in her head, and with this a sensation of affection and gratitude for her body came flooding through her. It warmed her. Awareness grew. She sensed the hardness of the surface on which she lay, the softness of the cushion pillowing her head. She remembered where she was, and where she had been. Kitty opened her eyes. Everything was blurred. For a second the swimming lines of light and shadow beguiled her. She thought she was drifting in the other place again. Then she steadied herself and concentrated, and slowly, grudgingly, the lines snagged and stopped, and yielded up a picture of a person sitting in a chair. He sat in a posture of extreme exhaustion. His head had slumped sideways. His legs lolled left and right. She heard the rasping of his breath. His eyes were closed. A chain hung about his neck. At its end was an oval piece of gold, centered with a green-black stone. It rose and fell with the rhythmic movement of his chest. Between his knees a long wooden staff rested at an acute diagonal. One hand was cupped loosely to support it. The other hung limply over the chair arm. After a while she remembered his name.
Nathaniel?
Her voice was so faint she could not be sure whether she had actually made a noise, or only sounded the word in her head. Nevertheless, it seemed to work. A grunt, a splutter. The magician's legs and arms jerked as if electrically charged. The staff fell to the floor. With something midway between a leap and a plunge, he was crouching at her side. She tried to smile. It was hard. Her face hurt.
"Hello,"
she said. The magician didn't answer. He just stared.
"You got the staff, then?"
she said. "And
my throat's dry. Got any water?"
Still no reply. His skin, she noticed, was red and chafed, as if he had been out in a high wind. He was gazing at her with extreme attention, yet still contriving to ignore her words completely. Kitty became irritated.
"Move out the way," she snapped. "I'm getting up."
She tensed her stomach muscles, moved an arm, and pressed her fingers to the floor to push herself up. An object fell from her grasp with a dull clang. A wave of nausea filled her. Her muscles felt like water. Kitty's head fell back upon the cushion. Something about her weakness scared her.
"Nathaniel,"
she began.
"What?"
He spoke for the first time.
"It's all right. Just rest there." "I want to get up." "I really don't think you should." "Help me up!"
The fury was fueled by anxiety, blossoming into sudden terror. The weakness was all wrong.
"I'm not lying here. What is it? What's happened to me?"
"You'll be fine if you just stay put." His tone was unconvincing. She tried again, pushed herself up a little, collapsed with a curse. The magician swore in tandem.
"All right. Here. I'll try to support your back. Don't try and take your weight. Your legs will... There. What did I tell you? Do what I say for once."
He grasped her beneath her arms, lifted her up and swung her round, hauling her toward the chair. Her legs trailed behind her, her feet scraped across the lines of the pentacle. With scant ceremony, Kitty found herself dumped in a sitting position. The magician stood facing her, breathing hard.
"Happy now?" he said. "Not really. What's happened to me? Why can't I walk?"
"They're not questions I can answer." He stared at his boots, large, scuffed leather ones, and across at the empty circle.
"When I broke in, Kitty," he said, "the room was icy cold. I couldn't find a pulse on you, and you weren't breathing, just lying there. I thought you were... I really thought you were dead this time. Instead..."
He raised his eyes.
"So, tell me, did you really?"
She looked at him for a time without speaking. The tension in the magician's face loosened into blank astonishment. He exhaled slowly and half sat, half slumped against the desk.
"I see," he said. "I see."
Kitty cleared her throat.
"I'll tell you in a minute. First, pass me that mirror, would you?" "I don't think. I'd rather look," she said crisply, "than use my imagination. So hurry it up. We've got things to do."
No amount of argument could dissuade her.
"After all," she said at last, "it's nothing very different to what happened to Jacob with the black tumbler. And he was fine."
"That's true." The magician's hands were growing tired. He adjusted the position of the mirror.
"I can dye the hair."
"Yes."
"And as for the rest, I'll kind of grow into it."
"Yes."
"In about 50 years. It's just lines, Kitty. Just lines. Lots of people have them. Besides, they might fade."
"You think?"
"Yes. They look a lot less bad already than when I first found you."
"Really?"
"Definitely. Anyway, look at me. Check out these blisters." "I was meaning to ask about them."
"Pestilence did it, when I got the staff."
"Oh. But it's the weakness that really scares me, Nathaniel. What if I never—"
"You will. Look at you waving your hands about. You weren't doing that 5 minutes ago."
"Wasn't I? Oh, good. Now you mention it, I do feel a little stronger. There you go, you see. But it's just so difficult," she said, "to look in the mirror and see a different face, to see that everything's changed."
"Not everything," he said.
"No?
No. Your eyes, they haven't changed at all."
"Oh."
She peered dubiously at the glass.
"You think?"
"Well, they were fine before you started squinting. Take my word for it." He lowered the mirror, placed it on the table.
"Kitty," he said, "I have to tell you something. The demons have broken out across London. After I found you, I tried to set the staff of Gladstone going. But," he sighed, "I couldn't make it. It's not the incantations. I've got the knowledge that I didn't have before. It's just... I haven't got the physical strength to force my will upon it. And without the staff, we can't face up to Nauda.
Nathaniel,
there may be other magicians left alive and unpossessed. I haven't gone looking yet. But even if we can round up some allies and get their djinn on our side, Nauda's much too strong. The staff was our only hope."
"That's not so." Kitty leaned forward in the chair. It was true what he'd said. She was moving a little more easily now. To begin with, everything had felt uncomfortable and misaligned, as if she were out of sync with her bones and sinew.
"I didn't go to the other place just for fun," she said primly. "You got the staff. I found Bartimaeus. Now all we need to do is put them together."
She grinned at him. The magician shook his head in vexation.
"Meaning what?" "Ah. Now you're not going to like this part.